Now with their big show, Mr. Bob and Mr. Ray.
Ah, boy, it's good to have... We're tea dancing here at the Bob and Ray studio. Kent Lyle Burley and the orchestra playing some music for mid-afternoon dancing pleasure. This is a...
Well, very good.
It's the kind of thing that's gone out of style around most of the country. But
tea dancing,
right?
Yeah.
Still do it here in New York.
You don't have a vocalist with a band, do you, Kent?
What's that?
A vocalist. You have a vocalist with the band.
No. We used to have a girl vocalist.
And a boy vocalist, too.
And
did you handle those as chores?
No, I never handled vocal chores.
Uh-huh.
I just led the band. But we are in the market for singers, and we're auditioning every Thursday.
So how are things going? Have you been booked into any college proms? Here it is, the end of October.
That's usually springtime, though, isn't it?
Well, they have fall dances, too.
They have fall dances, yes.
Yes.
No, we're not.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. Go back to the podium.
Yes, I'm sorry I asked. I thought maybe you...
What's that, Ray?
I'm sorry I asked. I thought maybe, you could plug or promote some of your upcoming dates.
Well, if we have any, I told you the one up there in Hillsdale, New Hampshire, we played a couple of weeks ago.
You know, if you want to get booked into Upsala, you should call President Heesh over there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he could arrange. He's president of the senior class.
Oh, well...
He could arrange.
I'll check with him, then.
Well, while he does that...
He got a commission?
I imagine he would get a commission, yeah. Well, anyway, once again, our scouts have been out combing the railroad and bus terminals around New York, and they're always on the lookout for victims of misfortune who need a helping hand from our generous Bob and Ray organization. And it looks as if we've come up with a good selection of pathetic cases today. Would you care to launch into the first one there at the microphone with you now, Bob?
Yep, I'd be happy to, Ray. This is Mr. Hobie Winkleman of Shelby, Montana. And I understand, Mr. Winkleman, you spent all the money you could scrape together to come to New York and clear your good name. Is that so?
Well, actually, I came to pay my debt to society. I gave up hope of clearing my good name several years ago.
Well, then I guess this is a matter involving the police, is it?
well, yes. I'm pretty sure it must involve them by now. You see, I was going through some books at my home out there in Montana about 10 years ago, and I came across one that had been taken out of the New York Public Library on June 28th, 1916.
Uh-huh. And since it was in your home, it obviously hadn't been returned to the library.
Well, obviously. And I guess it had been taken out by my father when he was a kid because it was a copy of The Touring Car Boys in the Adirondacks.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
But whoever took it out, it was my responsibility now. And even if the fine on overdue books in New York is still just 2 cents a day... That can add up to quite a piece of change in 59 years.
Certainly can. That's true. And, of course, you also had to live with the terrible knowledge that your debt was growing larger every day, that you just sat there doing nothing.
Oh, excuse me. I was well aware of that. I wanted to get married and make plans for the future, just like normal people.
Mm-hmm.
But with that awful thing hanging over my head, I couldn't begin to live until I'd returned that book and... taken my medicine for keeping it out since 1916.
And now you're here in New York at last, but I assume from that doleful expression on your face that you still haven't cleared up this terrible problem, huh?
Well, no. When I went to the address of the branch library where the book came from, I found there's a Chinese restaurant there now.
Ah.
And I gave my book to one of the busboys along with $768 in overdue fines.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't give me a receipt or anything, so I think I'm still in big trouble with the law.
Yeah, I think you've just been cheated out of your money without accomplishing anything at all. But ease your heartbreak, sir. As we move along, our generous Bob and Ray organization wants you to have this fine set of socket wrenches from the Rochester Wrench Company.
Well, I want the cops to take these away from me when I'm arrested.
You're entirely welcome. We knew you'd like them. Now, here is a lady with our next hard luck story, Mrs. Hermione Biddle of Honolulu, Hawaii. How are you, Ms. Biddle?
Fine, thank you.
I understand you traveled clear from your home in the mid-Pacific to launch a business venture, but it failed.
Well, that's right. Back home, people from the mainland just go wild over the roast suckling pig.
Yes.
One of our native dishes.
Yes.
So I thought I could make a bundle here in New York if I opened a restaurant that featured suckling pig.
Well, it seemed like a good idea. What went wrong? Tell us.
Well, for one thing, not many of the supermarkets around town carry suckling pig. But after I finally found one, I realized that the oven on the secondhand stove I'd bought wasn't big enough to cook it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the biggest thing I can roast is a medium-sized suckling chicken.
Uh-huh.
And nobody seems to get very excited about that.
Well, of course, you can't put an apple in its mouth or anything like that. I guess you would have problems. But to cheer you up anyway, our organization wants to present you with this lovely anchor for your yacht, complete with 100 feet of line.
Well, it's nice. It looks awfully heavy for a person to carry around who doesn't have a yacht.
Now, with today's final story, here's Mr. Nimrod Bushkin of Lake Winona, Indiana. Says on your card, sir, that you came here in the hope of finding enough lost items on the beach to make you rich.
Well, that's right. You see, I make my living at Lake Winona by hunting around on the beach every fall for things that people lost during the summer. You know, small change, mm-hmm. costume, jewelry, stuff like that.
Yep.
In good years, I clear as much as $15.
Well, that seems like a fair return, considering the fact you don't have anything invested but a few weeks of your time.
Oh, it's I'm not complaining. No. I just wanted to see my business grow along with the rest of America. So that meant finding a bigger beach, you know, like Coney Island, except that there are about 500 other guys out there, all hunting for stuff that people lost, and they chased me away after I'd only found two pennies and a button.
Well, it's going to be hard for you to get through the winter on that small profit, but our generous organization is going to make things easier for you with this lovely gift, a glass candy dish made in the shape of a duck. From Miss Phoebe's Gift Boutique, Tombstone, Arizona.
Well, that's a real help. Buying a glass candy dish in the shape of a duck is always one of my big expenses of the year.
Don't try to thank us. Use it in good health. And now, back to Ray at our main anchor desk. Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the footlights, and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. It's 2 a.m. Saturday morning at the Summer Garden Theater off Times Square in New York, the morning of the opening evening of Greg Marlowe's new musical play, A Tale of Two Cities. And Greg is called a last-minute rehearsal of a scene between Pop as Dr. Manette and Calvin as Charles Darnay. As
I know you're all tired. I know it's 2 a.m., but this is it. There is no tomorrow. We open tonight.
This is down to the wire, Mr. Barlow.
I am really tired, Mr. Barlow, but I know your problems, and I'm willing to go ahead.
Look, Barry and Harry are both slumped in their chairs over there, sound asleep. The chorus is half awake.
Mr. Floodgate is at the very expensive hotel, Midtown Hotel, in her suite, I understand.
She's probably asleep and has no worries at all. All she says is dip-a-doo, dip-a-doo, dee-doo.
Well, she is star, and that's where she should be.
Well, I'm beginning to have second thoughts, Mr. Barlow, but...
I want you to make some allowances now for the scene people. They're trying to put that scene together. Scenery, I should say.
Right.
Well, I want you to be careful, will you, please? They're all on triple overtime right now.
Oh, boy, this is costing you money as producer, Greg. Or wealthy Jacobus Pike, I should say.
It's costing Mr. Pike, actually. All right, this is Act 2, Scene 10.
Right.
Okay, Pop and
I'm Dr. Manette.
Right.
Okay. Charles Darnay, I rejoice to see you.
I am obliged. Miss Manette?
Is well. And your return will delight us all. She's gone out on some household matters, but we'll soon be home.
Dr. Manette, I knew she was from home. I took the opportunity of her being from home to beg to speak to you.
Duke? Yes? Bring your chair here and let's speak on it. Is Lucy the topic?
She is.
Go on.
You anticipate what I would say, though you cannot know how earnestly I say it, Duke. How earnestly I feel it, dear.
Duke?
Without knowing my sacred heart, Duke Padal.
Duke.
And the hopes and fears and anxieties, dip and dip and do.
Quiet, will you? Watch it back there.
All right, Mr. Barlow.
This is our last rehearsal before opening night.
Arnay, have you dip and dip to Lucy?
No.
Nor Duke?
Never have I doubted Dr. Doodles.
Have you any reason to believe that Duke loves you?
Duke, dip dip down. Doppa doodle do.
May I doop 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 if you think she is?
Dippa daffa do, dippa do, if did you what I meant to do.
Is sought by any other suitor?
Oh, it is if that Miss Burnett should bring to you any time on her own part to dippa dippa do, dippa 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 dop.
Wait a minute. What's the matter, Mr. Barlow? Mr. Barlow?
Yes?
What's the matter?
Dippa-dippa-da.
So apparently a case of jitters has taken over this part of the cast of A Tale of Two Cities, and we'll only find out more on Monday if you'll join us when we'll hear Mary say...
Curtain going up.
That's Monday in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
And now the makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the men of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., we're the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we have the red light on top turned off. Other times it's turned on. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. Other evening, we'd just gotten back into the squad car after chasing a purse snatcher across a city park when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said,
You sure got a lot of mud on your shoes running across that park, Sam.
Yeah, I don't know why they always turn on their lawn sprinklers at night. It's the very time we're most likely to be running across there chasing criminals.
It sure doesn't make much sense, Sam. You'd think they'd water the lawn in the daytime when nobody's around but people who don't have to run through the mud unless they want to.
Yeah, that's the way the bureaucrats at the park department do things, Ralph R. Jr. They don't care how inconvenient they make it for us.
I guess you're right, Sam. Sure doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I know. But what do they care if I get my shoes muddy?
Sure looks like they don't care, Sam.
Yeah, really looks that way, all right.
Calling car 119, car 119. Meet your commanding officer at the scene of a shooting near 3rd and Melrose. That's a shooting near 3rd and Melrose, 119.
Ah, 3rd and Melrose, huh?
That's us, Sam. Let's roll.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to, Ralph R. Jr. I sure hate to meet our commanding officer with this mud all over my shoes.
I know what you mean, Sam. He's a real stickler for neatness.
Yeah. He just chewed me out tonight at headquarters for having my tie crooked. No telling what he'll do when he sees this mud on my shoes.
He'll probably chew you out again, Sam. He's a stickler for neatness.
Yeah. Sure hate to meet him in these muddy shoes. Maybe I could let you out at 3rd and Melrose and then go get a shoe shine. You could just say I got tied up in traffic.
That's no good, Sam. The regulations say we're supposed to stay together. The old man's a stickler on regulations.
Yeah, but he's a stickler for neatness, too, Ralph R. Jr. Here I am with mud all over my shoes. Sure hate to meet him looking like this.
He'll probably chew you out all right, Sam. And you better not try to blame the bureaucrats at the park department, either. The old man hates for officers to give alibis. He's a stickler on that.
Yeah, I know. He's a stickler on that, all right.
Car 119, car 119, disregard that call to meet your commanding officer at the scene of a shooting near 3rd and Melrose. The assignment has been carried out by the men of Squad Car 55. All suspects in the case have been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
And while we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's an important word from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Friends, you all know how it overexcites your family cat to have a horde of flying insects swarming around the house. So why not end nervous tension for your pet by hanging strips of Einbinder flypaper in every room? Einbinder is a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of 3 generations. And if it was good enough for your grandfather, it's good enough for your cat. Buy some today.
The suspects in that shooting near 3rd and Melrose were all released for lack of evidence. Officers Finch and Kruger, Jr., each drew 10-day suspensions for failing to meet their commanding officer and for attempting to conceal muddy shoes.
And so justice prevails again, thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night. This is Harvey Swenson welcoming you to Let's Take a Tour. Today we're visiting the Croyle Kenny Road Sign Company, and alongside with me is Mr. Warren Sarko, the foreman, who's going to explain the technical equipment as we go along. What's this interesting tool, Mr. Sarko?
Well, that's a hammer. It's used to drive in nails.
I see. Now, Mr. Sarko, would you care to tell us what that group of men are doing over there?
You mean on the bench?
That's right, yes.
Well, they're having their lunch, Mr. Swenson.
Oh.
Now, the way they do that, the operation involved here is this. The noontime whistle will blow.
What's that room over there, Mr. Sarko?
That's the stake room. That's where the stakes are made.
And the road sign is clamped onto the stake?
No, the stake is clamped onto the road sign. Would you like to see one of the stakes, Mr. Swenson?
Oh, yes, very much, Mr. Sarko. It's something we're all interested in.
Well, now, this is a typical stake without the road sign on it. It's 41 inches in length. And it's pointy here at the bottom.
And that, of course, means that the road sign will stand 41 inches above the road.
No, no, no. We have to drive the stake 8 inches into the ground.
Well, then, subtracting 8 inches from the stake, the sign will stand 33 inches above the ground.
But now you've got to take into consideration the sign itself. It has height, too, you know.
How much, Mr. Sarko?
The sign is 8 inches high.
Then the sign will stand 41 inches above the ground.
Yeah, I guess it will. Say, Mr. Swenson, would you be interested in seeing our reject room?
Oh, yes.
It's piled full of signs that our machines ran off incorrectly.
Oh, yes, Mr. Sarko. Is it that small room over there?
No, that's the boiler. It's over here, Mr. Swenson.
Oh, good.
Careful not to step on any stakes. Here we are. Now, let me take this one here, one of these signs here. Take a look at it.
It says, speed limit, 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
The overhead printer went out of whack on that. It was supposed to read 20 miles an hour.
I see.
Take a look at this one, Mr. Swenson.
Well, that one says sharp curve ahead. What's a curve, Mr. Sarko?
Well, it was supposed to have read sharp curve ahead. Our typesetter got the axe for that one, incidentally.
Oh.
Incidentally, a good many copies of this particular sign got by the inspector here and were placed on quite a few roads.
Well, no harm done, I hope.
Well, you'd be surprised how many people got out of their cars and walked on ahead just to see what a sharp curve was.
Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, thank you, Mr. Warren Sarko, for showing us around the Croyle Kenny Road Sign Company. It was informative, revealing, and it happened on Let's Take a Tour.
Now more Bob and more Ray and more Radio New York over WOR New York.
Well, hi there, boys and girls. Let's all come to order now. It's another meeting of the Charlie Chipmunk Club. And here to read you our latest Charlie Chipmunk story is your old friend, Uncle Edgar.
Well, thank you, Bob, and hello, boys and girls. For today's adventure, let's all turn now to page 26 of the current issue of the Charlie Chipmunk magazine. And right up there on the top,
I wonder how many of you children are still subscribing to the Charlie Chipmunk magazine in the old-fashioned way, one year at a time. Now, if you are, why not consider how much easier it would be on your nerves if you only had to nag Mommy and Daddy once to send money for a lifetime subscription? The price is only $500, which is remarkably low when one stops to think that today's average toddler will live another 70 years to enjoy the Charlie Chipmunk magazine. Now back to Uncle Edgar.
Thank you. Now there in the first picture, kids, we see the Charlie Chipmunk and his friend Gustav Groundhog are talking about staging a big football game for the championship of the forest. And Charlie's going to get up a team of chipmunks to go against Gustav's team of groundhogs. How about that, boys and girls? Can you imagine chipmunks and groundhogs playing football?
Well, you'll be able to imagine it much better after you've gotten your official Charlie Chipmunk football jackets, children. They're made of spun synthetic that looks almost like satin. And they come with your choice of a chipmunk or groundhog picture on the back. And yet the price is only $14.50. Once again, Uncle Edgar.
Well, thank you. Now, in the next picture, kids, we see that Charlie has already recruited many of his little chipmunk friends to play on the chipmunk football team. And they're holding their first practice session in the nice big forest clearing.
Hey, how about those professional-looking helmets that Charlie and his fellow chipmunks are wearing, boys and girls? They're made of heavy-gauge plastic that'll really crack some enemy ribs when the ball carrier goes charging into the line. And yet genuine Charlie Chipmunk helmets in your small head size are priced at only $9.50.
Bob, I really don't think it's such a good idea to emphasize how sports equipment for little children can be used to inflict serious injury.
Well, I only mentioned cracked ribs, which aren't really very serious. Besides, the child psychologists at Charlie Chipmunk Enterprises think that scrawny kids are more apt to want a product that'll make them as brutal as the other youngsters.
I think that's terrible. I also don't approve of your referring to our sales promotion men as child psychologists.
Uncle Edgar, I'm afraid you're getting dangerously close to biting the hand that feeds you. So how about going on with the story, huh?
Well, all right, I'll try. Well, now in the next picture, kids, we see that Charlie is coaching his chipmunk team for its big game against the groundhogs. And he's diagramming all the plays on the blackboard that he wants his team to use.
Don't you wish you could have a whole book full of those winning football plays for your very own boys and girls? Well, now you can, because they're all available in a giant 16-page Charlie Chipmunk playbook. You'll learn how to gain yardage on the ground by throwing an elbow into your opponent's face. You'll also see how to gain through the air by tripping past defenders at just the right moment. These skills and many more, all in the big 16-page Charlie Chipmunk playbook. Priced at only $8.95.
Well, Bob, I'm really getting pretty steamed up about the way you're encouraging the children to cheat and injure their opponents.
Well, I don't think if a home office can sell a 16-page book for $8.95, I'm quite sure they won't stop doing it on your say-so. I just finished the story of being paid to read.
All right, but I don't like this one little bit. Now, in the next picture, kids, we can see that the day of the big game has arrived. Just look at all the little forest creatures sitting on the stands, enjoying their favorite refreshments as they wait for the opening kickoff.
That's genuine chipmunk cola the vendors are selling at the big game, kids. You'll certainly want to take several bottles of it along the next time you attend a sporting event at your school or playground. Chipmunk cola not only tastes fairly good, but best of all, it comes in extra heavy glass bottles that are great for throwing at the players on the field. Ask for it by name. Only 69 cents in the big half-quart size.
Well, in the next picture, kids, we see the kickoff taking place.
Sorry, Uncle Edgar. Time's up for today.
Good. I can call and report you to the FCC before they leave the office for the day.
Join us for more fun and stories at the very next meeting of the Charlie Chipmunk Club, boys and girls.
I fully expect this to end with you being banned from radio for life.
Now, before we all rise and repeat our oath of allegiance to Charlie Chipmunk, here's Uncle Edgar to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Now, the Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to, but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk. A heartwarming story of a girl who's learned to accept misfortune because it's the easiest thing to do. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is reclining on the piano stool in the downstairs music room. It's late afternoon, and Mr. Ashenfob, the village zoning commissioner, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Red Boiling Springs Municipal Zoning Commissioner Ashenfob. It was nice of you to travel clear from your zone over to mine so quickly after I called.
Well, it was really no trouble at all, Miss Bessinger. Our commercial zone downtown is right next to the residential one out here.
Oh, I didn't realize they had joined each other. It's about, half past three here now, so does that make it 2:30 or 4:30 downtown?
Well, it's the same time there as it is here, ma'am. See, these aren't time zones we're talking about. They're just neighborhoods with different building restrictions.
Well, I'm awfully glad to hear that. You know, the bank closes at 3 o'clock, and I've never been sure what time to leave our zone out here in order to make it.
Well, as I say, the time is the same in both places. You happen to live in a residential zone for one-family dwellings.
I see. I have a cousin in New Jersey who just moved into a one-family dwelling zone recently.
That's very interesting.
Yes, it is. She's an hour ahead of us back there. Seems strange that they'd have two different times in the same residential zone when there's no difference between here and the commercial zone down at the bank.
Well, I think you're a little confused on one point, Miss Bessinger. Your cousin in New Jersey doesn't live in the same residential zone that you do.
Oh, I didn't even know that you two were acquainted.
We're not. I never heard of your cousin until you just mentioned her.
Well, then I can't imagine how you figured out where she lives.
Miss Bessinger, can I be of some service, or did you just call me over here to drive me bananas?
No, this is certainly no time for frivolity, Red Boiling Springs Municipal Zoning Commission Ashenfob. I've just been worried sick about maintaining the property values around here ever since they put up that new billboard across the street. I didn't know your department allowed advertising in this neighborhood.
Well, we don't. Strictly against the zoning laws. But I haven't noticed any billboards in this part of town at all.
Well, this one was just put up yesterday, but you can see it right out the window. Frankly, I can't tell what they're advertising from the message. Amy Ferguson loves Junior Fazola. I guess Junior Fazola must be a new brand of breakfast food or something like that.
No, ma'am. Junior Fazola is a little boy who lives up in the next block. See, that's not an advertising billboard over there, Miss Bessinger. It's just a fence that some kids have written on with chalk.
Oh, my. I do believe that is a possibility, Red Boiling Springs Municipal Zoning Commission Ashenfob. I remember now that the people across the street built a fence a number of years ago to keep their horse from running away. But I just assumed it had been replaced by a new billboard. Oh, my, you just can't imagine how relieved I am to know that this lovely neighborhood isn't starting to get cluttered up with a lot of advertising. I almost feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Can it be that Edna's assurance of a continuing ban on billboards near her home may at last enable her to know true happiness? Or will the realization that she can't buy a new breakfast food called Junior Fazola merely lead to greater heartbreak? Be sure to join us for the next episode when Edna may be forced to stick with oatmeal in the gathering dusk. We welcome you again to The Big Scoop, a program that pays tribute to the outstanding accomplishments of the nation's working newspapermen. Here at our news desk, prepared to tell us about this week's Big Scoop Award, is our Big Scoop editor, Big Fred Scoop.
Thank you, Norman, and welcome to The Big Scoop. This week's handsome award, suitable for framing, together with a cashier's check for $15, goes to Glenn Boxwig, the star reporter of the Detroit Inquirer, Scimitar, and Morning Intelligencer. It was barely a year ago that Boxwig's big scoop began to take shape. He was at work in the newsroom on the evening of August 14th, 1974, when the paper's city editor approached him.
Boxwig, I think you just flipped out completely. Look at this headline you sent down to the composing room. Miss Storm May Miami. Now, what's that supposed to mean?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chief. That should read Storm May Miss Miami. I guess I get so interested in seeing whether the words would all fit in the headline that I put them in the wrong order.
Boxwig, you've always been the biggest chowderhead in this department. But I don't think anybody could be that dumb. Is there something on your mind?
Well, confidentially, Chief, I think I've hit on the story that's destined to become my big scoop. I was just going over the crime figures we got from the police department, and there's been a sharp decline in arrests for gambling over on the east side.
Well, Boxwig, it's only worth a front-page story when the crime rate goes up, not when it goes down.
I think you may change your mind when I give you the exact figures for the district, Chief. Last year, there were 22,516 arrests for gambling. This year, there were none. I think that means somebody's paying the police to lay off.
Oh, you're making a serious charge, Boxwig. If you're wrong in accusing the police of being crooked, they could make your life very unpleasant. So why not just forget it?
Sorry, Chief, I can't do that. A working newspaper man has a duty to the public. And if I have to, I'll lay down my life to uphold that duty.
And so, reporter Glenn Boxwig started the tedious job of putting together the bits of information that would result in his big scoop. First, he befriended a patrolman in the 10th District.
Have a drink on me, officer. Then maybe we can talk about the way you're lining your pockets with money from the mob.
You rotten little punk. Next, Boxwig took his case directly to the police commissioner.
Commissioner? I've heard there are things going on around here that'll make Watergate look like a Sunday school picnic. You suppose that could be true?
You miserable pipsqueak. And finally, he approached the gambling czar of Detroit's east side.
Czar, there's word on the street that you've got the whole police department in your pocket. Any comment?
A raunchy little upstart. Armed with all the facts, Glenn Boxwig returned to face his editor.
I nailed it down, Chief. It was just a typographical error in the police crime report that made it look as if the gambling rate had dropped to zero. So that's my big scoop. The department's got an incompetent typist preparing his figures.
Good work, Boxwig. Write the story.
I don't have time, Chief. The police have given me 2 hours to get out of town. They're going to charge me with every unsolved crime on the books. I think I'll go to California and get into real estate sales. That's a great career out there for any red-blooded young American.
And so it was that Glenn Boxwig capitalized on the story he'd obtained to launch himself in a whole new business career. A little more than a year later, he's already earned more selling real estate than he could have made in a lifetime as a newspaper man. That's why he's been chosen to receive today's Big Scoop Award, appropriately inscribed to Glenn Boxwig, a credit to his profession, and a man whose story we've been honored to tell on the Big Scoop.